One more time, let me remind you what we are talking about. God has revealed himself through general revelation and through special revelation. And it's in the areas where God has revealed himself that people ask questions. And so apologetics is to give the answers to the questions that people ask as much as we can, so that they will be able to listen to the gospel without prejudice, without things in the way that keep them from hearing accurately what God has said. In the area of creation, there are questions about evolution. In the area of conscience, there are questions that deal with psychology, with the nature of man, with the area of suffering. Then we move into the area of history. Is, in fact, Jesus Christ an historical person? And did the things that the New Testament tells us about him actually happen in history? Are they real events? I think sometimes we are embarrassed or afraid to talk about Jesus because we don't know how to defend some of the important things that we believe about Jesus. We get backed into a corner and then all we can say is, well, that's what I believe. But we can't say why we believe it or how we know it's true. So if the other person says, well, that's fine for you, but I don't need it, then we're sort of stymied. You know, what else can you say? I think the problem is that when we talk about Jesus, it is difficult for us to narrow him down to an historical person in real time, real events. We're not talking about somebody who is a mythical creature of history, somebody that's just a figment of imagination. We're talking about a real creature of history, a real person who is just as historical as Abraham Lincoln or Julius Caesar. None of us have problems talking about Abraham Lincoln, right? No embarrassment there at all. And we don't really feel bad talking about Julius Caesar. Now, the point of what I'm doing this morning and tonight and tomorrow morning is to try to help you to see that Jesus is just as historical in the same terms as Abraham Lincoln or Julius Caesar. And all of the life of Jesus is that historical. Not only his birth, not only his life, but also his death and his resurrection. And it all fits into the realm of real history. There is a series of books on the history of Western civilization by Will and Ariel Durant. They were a Jewish couple who were themselves agnostic. The third volume of that series, it's 11 volumes in all, third volume is on Caesar and Christ. And it's interesting that what they say in the chapter on Christ, now in all of their writings, they are very quick every time they come to religious areas to acknowledge the fact that they don't believe, and yet they're very open-minded about it. When they come to Christ, it's interesting how they evaluate him. They say that if the same tests were applied to any other character of ancient history that are applied to Jesus in order to get rid of him as a historical figure, that you would have to throw out most individuals from ancient history, including such people as David and Moses and non-religious figures as well. In fact, they go on to say that the history about Jesus is the best history of all ancient history. Now remember, these are agnostics writing. And then they come to the resurrection and they say there is exactly the same historical data for the resurrection of Christ that there was for his life. But since that demands a miracle, we're not obligated to believe that. I find that interesting that here are people who, you know, are historians. That's their profession, at least it was. That was their life. Who acknowledge that, boy, Jesus measures up to any other historical figure, even in the resurrection. But of course, that demands a miracle. Since we don't believe in miracles, that's too bad. We throw that out of history. Well, the point is, Jesus is a real person. And there are many, many Jesuses that are being taught today. There is the Jesus of the cultist, and the Jesus of the spiritist, and the Jesus of the liberals, and the Jesus of the super spiritual, but there is only one historical Jesus, and I want us to meet him tonight. So I want us to play, pretend like we're playing a little game. You're probably too young to remember the old TV game, To Tell the Truth. They would have three characters sitting behind a table, and each one would give a certain testimony about himself, and the people would try to guess which one was the real one, and then they'd ask the real one to stand up. All right, let's play Will the Real Jesus Please Stand Up? Okay? And we'll go through certain aspects of the life of Jesus and try to figure out who the real Jesus is. First of all, let's talk about the birth of Jesus. His birth. And we'll talk about the year of his birth. And I'll give you three options to all of these and let you make a choice. First option is, the first character says, nobody knows for sure when I was born because there is no way historically to figure it out. But it was sometime probably around the year zero. The second character says, I was born in the year 6 BC when there was the conjunction of Jupiter, Saturn, and Mars. And that is what made the stars, or the star that led the wise men. The third one says that I was born in 4 BC. Okay, how many choose A? You got to commit. Anybody? One. How many choose B? Two. How many choose C? Most of you. All right, good. You're right. 4 BC. It's interesting that Jesus was born before Christ. That's the only problem in this whole situation, but that's because Dionysius, who made up the calendar, made a mistake, and there is no zero and et cetera when you come to BC and AD. But 4 BC is the best date for the year of Christ. He was born during the reign of Caesar Augustus. Caesar reigned from March 17, 44 BC to August 19, AD 14. But furthermore, according to Matthew 2:1, Luke 1:5, who was the king at the time Jesus was born? Who? No. King Herod. King Herod the Great. Herod died in the year 4 BC. Therefore, Jesus had to be born when? At least by the time Herod died. And by the time Herod died, you know, he was guilty of killing his wife, several of his sons, his uncle, other friends and relatives. It was not a good idea to be too close to Herod. By the time he died, he was eaten up with syphilis. He was mentally deranged. And the killing of the children in Bethlehem was totally irrelevant to him. I mean, what's a few more Jewish kids to be killed? And so what we know about that event fits perfectly with the last days of Herod. In fact, Herod put in his will that as soon as he died, all of the prisoners were to be killed because he wanted everybody to mourn his death, and he figured that was the only way to get people to mourn his death, since almost everybody in the country had a relative in prison. So the Lord was born sometime before the death of Herod. Herod died sometime in the spring of 4 BC, sometime between March 12th and April 4th. So Jesus was born before March 12th in the year 4 BC. Any questions on that? I'm going to go on accumulating other stuff. Let's talk about the specific date when Jesus was born. Right? Date on the calendar. A, he was born in the spring because sheep were grazing outside. B, he was born, as everybody knows, sometime around December the 25th. C, the date, specific date of his birth is totally unknown. There is no way to guess at all. All right, since the majority were right last time and the majority is always right, let's see if we can find out when Jesus was born. Let's start at the bottom. How many say it's totally unknown? Okay, one, two, three, four. Good. How many say December the 25th? just one. How many say the spring when sheep were grazing outside? Right? Most of them are. Yeah. The best date actually is around December the 25th. That's astounding. In the first place, the argument about sheep grazing outside does not carry weight because what are you going to do with sheep during the winter? Are you going to put them in your bedroom? You know, sheep are always moved from place to place where they can graze outside. And the particular area where the birth of Jesus was announced was an area where sheep were kept year-round by temple shepherds. They were sheep that were kept specifically for temple sacrifices. So they would have been outside in the area of Bethlehem all year round. Now, if you said unknown, don't feel too bad. You can't be dogmatic about this. But from historical data that goes back as close as possible to the time of Christ, the area between December the 25th and January the 6th traditionally has always been held, even before the arguments about the winter solstice. So it is a valid date as a possibility, and it falls in the time of the Feast of Lights, what's today called Hanukkah. And one of the ancient Jewish proverbs was that the birth of the Messiah would be announced to the temple shepherds around the time of the Feast of Lights. And I don't think that, you know, God plays games with these things, although I don't want to be dogmatic, but the Feast of Lights is a feast that is representing the light coming into the world. And Jesus said during the Feast of Lights in John 8, I am the light of the world. So it could very well be that he was actually born at that time. At least you don't have to be embarrassed about observing Christmas. Yes, sir?
If Herod died in 4 B.C., that's not a very long time between the 25th and the 1st to die. Do you see what I mean?
Go ahead, develop that.
Like if he was born earlier, like in spring, it would be more of a time for Herod to die in 4 B.C.
If he was born... let's say at the turn of the year. Now, you know, our calendar system is a little bit different from theirs. So let's say he was born in December and Herod died in April. Okay, then he would have, there would be about 4 months there before Herod died. Now, I'm not sure. Yeah, it would be the year approximately, it would be, we would call it the year 5/4 because the Jewish calendar system, the Jewish New Year began actually in the fall, in October of that year, not in January. We think in terms of the year changing in January. That's not the way they thought. They had two New Years. There was one in the fall and one in the spring, and their calendrical system began in the fall. Yes, sir?
Is there any historical evidence as to the approximate time when Augustus Caesar Augustus gave the decree for the census?
That's a little bit problematic in the book of Luke, but yeah, there is. The question has to do with the Greek word pra. Let me go into that with you afterwards rather than confusing everybody on that right now. It has to do with the dates of Quirinius of Syria. All right, let's see. A third one in this area. Let's talk about who the Magi were, okay? Still dealing with the birth of Christ. Who were the Magi? A, they were from the Orient, approximately 2 years' journey away. B, it is unknown who they were. C, they are Persians. Persian cult leaders carrying with them. Carrying rugs with them. Okay, let's start in the middle this time. How many say unknown? Any takers? No. All right. A, they were from the Orient, about 2 years away. Okay. And C, they were Persians. Okay. The correct answer is C. They were actually Persians, otherwise known as Parthians. The idea about them being from the Orient has to do with the fact they were from the East, but you know, in those days almost everybody was from the East, somewhere in the East. That's not New Jersey, that's anywhere in the Arab world on. The word magi is in fact a Persian word, and these people were called Parthians. They were the heads of clans in what is today called Iran. They were astrologers. They were probably the spiritual children of Daniel, who was at one time the head of this particular group. They were called in the Old Testament times Chaldeans. Their ruler was Phraates the Fourth. Let me spell that. Phraates the Fourth, who was dying in the year 5 BC. And these men, if they were in fact the spiritual children of Daniel, knew that the ruler of the world would come after or during the fourth reign from the time of Babylon, because that's what Daniel had said. And so they went to the Western culture to find the king that had been prophesied to them by Daniel. And naturally they wound up in Jerusalem looking for that king. What was the star? You'll often hear around Christmas time people will try to reconstruct the star, and they will talk about this conjunction of Jupiter, Saturn, and Mars, which does not fit. The star moved and it came to a specific point. Therefore, it had to be something that was supernatural. It was not merely a natural stellar event. And some people would say it was the Shekinah glory of God. It was the Spirit of God embodied, leading them to the place where the Messiah was. Any questions on any of these dates before we move on to the ministry of Christ? Let me recommend you to look in Alfred Edersheim's book, Life and Times of Jesus the Messiah. He gives, and I notice that's in the library here, he gives the simplest presentation of the date. The data has to do with Jewish expectations, with the time of the year, with the people to whom the announcement was made, where the sheep would have been, and the oldest traditions of the early church. Yes. Well, with the church, it wasn't the celebration of lights. That was the Jewish festival, Hanukkah. But with the church, it was actually the pinpointing of a period of time when the Messiah came. Many think that they did that only because of the winter solstice, because of the Roman festival at that time. But there is evidence that seems to go at least even before that, putting that as the date. Okay. Now, that's not a firm date. That's the least firm of all the dates that I have. The rest of these are pretty narrowed down to zero. Any other questions? Bill?
What about the 2 year thing that you hear now and then? That was 2 years after the birth.
Yeah. That's because Herod had all of the children under 2 years of age killed. But if Herod thought that the kid was 2 years old, knowing his mentality, he would have had all kids under 10 killed. It was just a safety device. Let's make sure we wipe him out, because even when they came, they didn't know when he was born. All they knew was when his star appeared. And there is no place that people would have come that was 2 years journey away from Jerusalem. Even China wasn't that far in those days, and the men were not Chinese, because the word magi isn't Chinese, it's Iranian. Anything else? All right, let's go on to his ministry. The beginning of his ministry. By the way, if you get at least 40% of these right, you get to stay next week. If you don't, you have to stay. All right, let's talk about the beginning of the ministry of Christ. When did it start? A. Unknown. Now that hasn't been right so far, so eventually it has to be right, right? We don't just throw in things like that for nothing. B, his ministry began in the year A.D. 27. And D, his ministry began in the year A.D. 29. Those dates probably don't really mean a whole lot to you, do they? Well, let's try. How many would say A.D. 29? Now you recognize at that time Jesus would be approximately 33 years old. How many say A.D. 27? Got a lot of converts on that one. Huh? How many would say unknown? Nobody. And the correct answer is A.D. 29. In fact, if you want to look this one up, you can look in Luke 3, verse 1 to start with. Luke 3, verse 1. The beginning of the ministry of Christ is pinpointed very specifically by Luke. Luke, remember we talked about this morning, is our historian. He's interested in showing where in the world Jesus fits in. And he pinpoints it to the 15th year of the reign of Tiberius Caesar. Pontius Pilate was governor of Judea. Herod was tetrarch of Galilee. Philip was tetrarch of the region of Iturea and Trachonitis. And Licinius was tetrarch of Abilene, which was not in Texas at that time. And it was the high priesthood of Annas and Caiaphas. Now, the 15th year of Tiberius Caesar is a dead giveaway. Don't you remember I told you earlier when Caesar Augustus stepped off the throne? It was in the year A.D. 14. You add 15 to 14, and what do you come up with? 29. It was the 15th year of the reign of Tiberius Caesar. So it was the year A.D. 29. There's another pinpoint to that. Look over in John chapter 2, verse 20. John 2, verse 20. The Jews therefore said it took 46 years to build this temple. And the Greek word is the word naos, which means the inner building. It was the holy place, that inner building. The Greek text, it says, this temple has been in the building 46 years. So they are pinpointing specifically the time that they are talking to Jesus, 46 years after the beginning of that specific temple. And that specific temple began to be built in 17 B.C. 17 plus X equals 46. X equals 46 minus 17. X equals 29. So again, we have the year 29, and that was early in the ministry of Christ. Oh, now that raises a horrible problem. How old was he then when he began his ministry? 33. He was born sometime before the death of Herod the Great, year 4 BC. He began his ministry in 29. And I know in Sunday school they always say Jesus was 30 when he began his ministry, but that's not what the Bible says. Luke says, and being about 30. And that is as specific as Luke is when it comes to the age of Christ and the beginning of his ministry. And when Luke wanted to be specific, as you can see, he can be very, very specific. But when he aged Christ, he simply said about 30. So he was actually more like 33 when he began his ministry. Hate to mess up a lot of Sunday school stories, but... How long did Jesus minister? Everybody ought to get this one right. Okay? How long did he minister? Let's call that the duration. A, 3+ years. B, 2 years. C, 1 year. All right. How many say 3+ years? Some of you aren't so sure anymore, huh? How many say 2 years? And how many say 1 year? Okay. Well, in this case, the majority was right. His ministry lasted 3+ years. We can actually count 4 Passovers that Jesus was involved in. Personally, I believe his ministry began sometime in the fall, the year AD 29, and then he successively was involved in 4 different Passovers, including the Passover in which he died. So that would make his total ministry approximately 3.25 to 3.5 years. Now, there are some people who say he only ministered 1 year because the Synoptic Gospels seem to only talk about 1 Passover, but they are not giving the total picture, as we talked about this morning. Any questions on the time of his ministry?
I know there's not much on his childhood. You skipped over. Is there anything at all we know about that?
All we know for sure about his childhood is his appearance at the temple at the age of 12. Some people put that into terminology that modern Jews would use of the bar mitzvah, that was the age of his coming of age, which is very possible. A Jewish girl was considered a woman, or I'm sorry, she was considered a young woman at the age of 12, and she was considered a full woman at the age of 12 and a half. For Jewish boys as well, they attained their manhood at the age of 12. A boy who wasn't married by the time he was 16 or 17 was considered to be a little bit weird, you know, and girls were often married sometime between the age of 12 and 14. There is a lot of apocryphal data about the childhood of Christ. Have any of you ever read any of the stories about him? Bill has. Yeah, there's some real cute ones about they were playing one day and they wouldn't let Jesus have his way, so he turned them all to stone. And, you know, when their mothers called them for dinner, Jesus felt compassion, and so he turned them back into live kids. Stories like that, which are obviously mythical, okay, those are not real. They occur in the what's called a pseudepigraphical material, or the false gospels about Christ. Other than that, nothing, absolutely nothing is known of his childhood. It seems that God deliberately put a veil over that area. All we know is that he grew up. You know, and he grew up as a natural person. He increased in wisdom and stature and favor with God and man. Being raised as a carpenter gave him a lot of physical exercise. People had a lot of contact with him. But other than that, we know nothing. But if I ever get a vision, I will let you know. Any other questions on his ministry? Okay, let's talk about his death. His death. Let's talk about the day of the week. A, he was crucified on Wednesday. B, he was crucified on Thursday. C, he was crucified on Friday. Now, which day did he have to be crucified in order to be 3 days and 3 nights in the grave? All right. How many say he was crucified on Wednesday? One? Okay. It takes courage to stand alone. And even if you're wrong, you deserve a medal for being courageous. B, Thursday. Many more. C, Friday. Minority. Well, the answer from all historical data is, in fact, Friday. The issue about being 3 days and 3 nights in the grave is a non-issue. Look back with me at the book of Esther, chapter 4 and 5. When Jesus said, as Jonah was in the belly of the whale, 3 days and 3 nights, the Son of Man will be in the earth, he was using an idiomatic phrase. An idiom means a figure of speech that was used in Hebrew that means basically day after tomorrow. Where is Esther? I can't even find it. Esther, Job. Okay. Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther. Esther 4, verse 16. Go assemble all of the Jews who are found in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my maidens will also fast in the same way, and thus I will go into the king. Then you look at chapter 5, verse 1. Now it came about on the third day that she went into the king. And if you were judging by our use of that language, it would sound like she was going to fast for 3 solid days, then go into the king. It says 14 times in the Gospels Jesus was raised on the third day. It never once says in all of Scripture that he was raised after the third day. He was raised on the third day. And the Greek term that is used for the day of his crucifixion is the word paraskeuē, P-A-R-A-S-K-E-U-E, which was a technical term meaning Friday. So it says specifically the day of preparation, which was the Hebrew term paraskeuē, or Friday, was the day of his crucifixion. In fact, the Jews said that they could not go in at the time of the trial of Christ on Friday morning because it was the conjunction of their holy day, and the next day was a high day, which was the conjunction of a feast day with a Sabbath. The feast day was the feast day of the beginning of unleavened bread, and the Sabbath, of course, was Saturday, their last day of the week. So the Jews had to get Jesus off the cross before Saturday, and they couldn't go into Pilate's chamber because to them it was a feast day, a holy day. It was the first day, or it was the day of the Passover. Some people will raise questions, how in the world could Jesus have eaten the Passover supper the night before his crucifixion, and then the Jews have celebrated the Passover on the day of his crucifixion? And the answer is very, very simple. Jesus was a Galilean, and the Galileans had a different calendrical system from the Judean Jews. Most people today think that all Jews began the day at what time? Sunset. That's not accurate. In fact, there are two different biblical means of reckoning. You can reckon the beginning of the day at dawn, or you can reckon the beginning of the day at sunset. For instance, you probably are familiar with Matthew 28, when the women went out to the tomb. And Matthew, a Galilean, said, as it began to dawn toward the first day of the week. And all of the synoptic gospel writers who were Galileans used the beginning of the day starting with the morning. The Judeans, where the temple was, started the day in the evening. And so for the Lord and his cohorts who were Galileans, their day of Passover, the 14th of Nisan, began in the morning. And so their day for celebrating was Thursday. For the Judean Jews, the day began in the evening, so for them the 14th of Nisan began at the night on Thursday, and therefore they celebrated the Passover on Friday afternoon, which to them was the same day that for Jesus Thursday afternoon was. You follow that at all? The point being, the Galileans and Judeans had different systems of reckoning the day of the week. So the Lord and his disciples both ate the Passover according to the Galilean calendar. Then he became the Passover according to the Judean calendar. You know, the most interesting things about that is, you all know what time Jesus was crucified? What time? The ninth hour? What was the ninth hour? No, actually, he died at 3. Okay. He was crucified at this section of the morning, sometime between 9 and noon. He was on the cross definitely before 12 o'clock. The text says the third hour, but you know, they didn't have wristwatches in those days, so that the third hour was 9 o'clock. Okay, it was actually... the third hour was a section of time, okay, anywhere between that and that. Then he died over here in the afternoon in this section of time. He died at the ninth hour. Because of the time of Passover, the Jewish law was very, very specific. The Passover lamb was to be crucified, what was called between the evenings. a specific area of time between 2:30 in the afternoon and 4:30 in the afternoon. The lamb had to be killed at that time. It was precisely at that time that Jesus said, "It is finished." And then what happened meanwhile back at the temple when Jesus said, "It is finished"? The veil was torn. And God timed that so that that priest sacrificing the one animal representative of the nation was standing right there in front when that thing was torn. And that's how they know precisely it was torn from top to bottom. None of the disciples could have seen that. The testimony of that had to come from the Jewish priest. It tore from the top down. It's astounding to see the way God worked all of these details, you know, from all of eternity past, so that the Lamb of God and the Lamb of Israel, you know, were fused right there at that time. And they could never question who that was dying out there beyond the wall. Okay, one other thing. Let's talk about one other date. What was the date of Jesus' death? Okay, we know the year he began his ministry. We know how many Passovers he went through. So what date does that bring us to? What was the year of his death? You can count on your fingers if you want. 29, 30, 31, 32, 33. Okay, he started his ministry in 29. He had four Passovers. First one was in 30, second in 31, third in 32, the fourth in 33. He was killed on the fourth Passover of his life, or of his ministry, the year AD 33. What was the date of Passover in the Jewish calendar? Anybody know? How did you know when it was time for Passover? What time of the month was it? Anybody know that? It was the time of the full moon. Okay, full moon. And the date or the month was Nisan. That's the Jewish name for the month. And the day would be the 14th. The moon has a 28-day cycle. And the day of the full moon was Nisan 14. Now, from this point, it's Daksup. It is very, very simple to trace back on our calendar system all of the full moons and find out when any full moon was at any point in history. What was the full moon, the date of Passover, in the year AD 33? And the answer was April the 3rd, AD 33. Jesus was killed on April the 3rd. What would that make Sunday? April the 5th. The resurrection was April the 5th. Simple as that. Isn't that exciting? It is to me anyway. I did all of my doctoral work on that simple little problem trying to figure all of that stuff out. Any questions on any of those dates before I finish up? Yes, sir. It means before Christ. Isn't that interesting? Yeah, I would be confused over that, except that the calendar system is a man-made thing, and the man who made the calendar, his name was Dionysius, he made a mistake reckoning back. In other words, he did not have all the data necessary. He was in the Middle Ages. And it was at the insistence of a pope at that time that they changed the calendrical system. And so using the material he had at that time, he reckoned back, but he made some historical errors in going back. We have a lot more data than he had, including the Babylonian, Persian timetables that give us a span so that we can date back very, very accurately, clear back to at least 967 BC in terms of all of these moons and dates. So in other words, the guy who made our calendar, BC AD, goofed. That's the only answer to that. Any other questions? All right, let's talk about the alternatives for who this Jesus was. We have six false alternatives given today. You have probably heard the trilogy of C.S. Lewis. He was either a liar, a lunatic, or Lord. Now people have added another one. He was a liar, lunatic, legend, or Lord. I've accumulated even more than that from people who speak today. I'm going to put them in terms of M's instead of L's so that I can be creative. Some people say he was a myth. He never lived. But the answer to that is, from at least the historical evidence, if he was a myth, then Julius Caesar was a myth. And a lot of other ancient worthies like Hammurabi, David, Socrates were myths as well. If Jesus was a myth, then there is no such thing as ancient history. You can forget it all. Some people say that he was a misunderstood person, that his disciples didn't understand what he was saying, so they remade him into the Jesus of the Bible. The Bible doesn't tell us about Jesus. The Bible simply tells us who the disciples wanted him to be. The problem with that is that the record tells us that the disciples didn't understand who he said he was. In fact, they made him into what modern man wants him to be. Remember, Peter said, "Look, Jesus, you don't have to die. I'll take care of you. Don't worry." So if anybody misunderstood Jesus, it was the disciples, but they misunderstood him in the opposite direction of what the biblical record tells us. In fact, even after the resurrection, Peter ran down to the tomb. He looked in. He said, "It can't be." Or, I'm sorry, John looked in. Peter stood around at the door. No, which one looked in? Peter looked in. John stood at the door. Thirdly, people today say that he was a misguided man, that he really did think that he was the Messiah. But unfortunately, he had a few buttons missing. There is a psychiatrist who has written a book called A Few Buttons Missing. And he says about Jesus Christ, he said, "For anyone to propose that Jesus was insane is itself insane. If someone were to sum up all of the teaching of Jesus, it would add up today to more than the accumulation of all of the wisdom of today's psychiatrists." He was not suffering from delusions of grandeur. In fact, if Jesus had been suffering from delusions of grandeur, he would never have voluntarily gone to the cross. That spelt defeat. Fourthly, people say that he was a moral man. Yeah, good man. Good man. He just wasn't God. The problem with that is that Jesus was crucified for a specific sin. What was the sin? Blasphemy. Good men don't blaspheme. And if Jesus blasphemed in claiming to be the Son of God, then he was not a good man. Okay. He could have been crazy. He could have been misunderstood, but he wasn't good. In fact, the Jesus of the liberals, I think, is totally inexplicable. You know, here is this nice guy who loves everybody, does good to everybody, and yet for some reason winds up getting stapled to a cross. If he was whom the liberals say he was, how come he got crucified? How did he make so many enemies? Why did they hate him? So the morality claim doesn't fit. If he was merely moral, he shouldn't have gotten crucified. Fifthly, people today will claim that he was a medium, a spirit medium. When I was in college, I took a course in philosophy of religion, and we had a spirit medium come to the class. And he did some pretty interesting things. I think now they were tricks. At that time, I didn't know, really. But I'm beginning to look into it a little more complexly than I could then. But anyway, I had never seen him before. And he supposedly blindfolded his eyes. And after that, he had us write down questions on a slip of paper. And then he took the paper and held it up to his head. And I promise you, cross my heart, hope to die, kiss a pickle in the eye, that I had never seen this guy before, and yet he knew my name and he knew what the question was on the piece of paper. He got it wrong in terms of the answer, but you know, I was impressed at the time that he knew who I was and he knew my question. And I didn't know at the time that he got it wrong. I asked him about which college I was going to and what I was going to go into. And then we asked this guy at the end of his talk who he thought Jesus was. Now, this was a secular university. It wasn't a Christian school. And he said Jesus was a spirit medium, that he was a man far ahead of his age who was able to contact beings who had gone before, and that he recognized he was really a superpower and he was following in the line of Jesus. Yeah, that's what Jim Jones finally wound up saying, that Jesus was a medium. And Jim Jones, because he got involved in that, was following in the steps of Jesus. The problem with that is that Jesus opposed religion per se. And when people accused him of doing his miracles in the power of Satan, Jesus said, look, there are two sides. There is God's side and there is Satan's side. And anybody who is not with me as the Son of God is in fact on Satan's side. And there was no room for mediums, for spirits, in the doctrine of Jesus. Sixth alternative, some people say today that Jesus was malevolent, that he was deliberately misleading people. This is one of the answers of modern Orthodox Jews.